Welcome to episode 65 of the Frank Online Marketing Show. I'm Temma Frank. Today's interview is a little bit different from some of the others. We're delving down today into the motivations of entrepreneurs and how they can deal with overwhelm and focus their activities better to be more productive. This is relevant actually not just for entrepreneurs, but for business executives too. I'm interviewing speaker, author, and small business consultant Melanie Benson Strick. She works with entrepreneurs to help them streamline and optimize their businesses and overcome the limiting beliefs that might be holding them back. So in this interview, you'll find out how she's dealt with some of her own limiting beliefs and the importance of really thinking through the costs and benefits every time you're about to say yes and take on a new project. I think you'll find some good tips in here, and I will chat with you briefly at the end of the interview. I'd really love to start with the whole overwhelm thing because it's a subject that's near and dear to my own heart.
Not because you would ever get overwhelmed, right?
No, not me. So why don't we start there? Why don't you talk a little bit about that and how business leaders can deal with that problem? Because I think it's an even greater problem than ever before with all the social media bombarding us.
And I think that overwhelm is probably one of the most significant challenges that faces business in general. I think so many people are trying to do more with less. And as entrepreneurs, there is a embedded code that runs in our brain called get more done, achieve more, strive for more, go have more, you know, and depending on our definition of success, we either are able to find a place where we're really satisfied and we might even say satiated by what we've achieved. And we learn to really experience that and enjoy it. And that is what I call the maintenance mode. You really get into a place where you just maintain what you have. But that's very rare and infrequent, so most of us are in that striving for more.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think overwhelm is really a mindset in a lot of ways. It's almost like it's a bridge between the way our brain processes information and how we take things in, and then whatever beliefs and strategies that we go throughout the world with in terms of what we are defining success as and how we go about achieving more of that, then it dictates what level of overwhelm. And one of the biggest patterns I see with people who really get into overwhelm is they tell themselves, I'm still not where I need to be. Mm-hmm. I have so much on my list, when really it's just a choice. You know, we're making the choice, but somehow we kind of fall into that weird pattern.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that because, I mean, particularly working in the field I do, which is all about digital marketing, and so there's a huge social media component, and it's a field where things are changing every day. So invariably, I've got 300 or 400 items on my to-do list. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, yes, obviously there's a choice in there because I can't possibly do them all. But can you explain a bit more about how do you deal with that kind of thing without feeling overwhelmed? How do you figure out those priorities?
Well, and that's such a good conversation to have because the prioritization, I use a different prioritization process than most people do. And I call it my green light formula. How do I know what to green light? What's going to get my attention? What's going to get my resources?
Yeah.
And you know, I find that you're not alone. You know, anyone that feels that way is not alone. I mean, I'm not immune to it either. It's just I when you have a toolbox of tools to turn to, you know, you can move yourself out of it faster. And that is, you have to really look at what's important, not just from a financial or from a goal perspective, but from a life perspective.
Yeah.
You know, how do I want to experience my business? Most of us have gone into this default mode where we just say yes to things because we're afraid to say no, that we'll miss money or an opportunity. And so we have to ask ourselves, if I say yes to this, what am I saying no to?
Yeah.
So in fact, that is probably one of the most significant, poignant mantras that I've used to grow my business over the years. And that is to really understand that I can't say yes to everything and enjoy my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, lifestyle is super important to me. Like, I don't like working more than 30, 35 hours a week. That's my max.
Right.
And most of my clients, I'm bringing them out of the chaos of 80, 90, 100-hour work weeks. And they're like, I don't know what to do. So I think that's one level. It's like really getting what else is important to you. And Secondly, you know, and again, I'm digesting a very, you know, a customized formula that I do for my clients into a couple of sound bites here. But,
right.
you know, I think that we also have to look at how is this really going to make me money? And is this a short-term strategy to money? Is this a long-term strategy to money? And where am I at with my own cash flow? Do I need to only be focusing on short-term because, you know, 30 days from now, I'm not sure how we're going to make payroll? Mm-hmm. Or do we have the short-term handled? And we really have to start looking at the long-term strategies that'll set us up for better long-term sustainable consistent revenue. So I think most of us, you know, we get that we have to have money coming in the door, but oftentimes our focus is on the strategies that aren't delivering what we need when we need it. And that's what creates the overwhelm because it's like, oh my gosh, how do I catch up?
You raise a really excellent point there that sometimes it may be worth sacrificing some short-term earnings in order to develop a more solid long-term, which I think is easy to overlook. When you're trying
yes.
to
yes, and entrepreneurs and business owners, as a rule, until they learn differently, by the way, the smartest, most capable, the most you know, profoundly successful people on the planet can do this wrong and create struggle for themselves because they don't realize that in their own mind, they know exactly what they want to do. In their own mind, they have a plan of action usually, but they don't. You know, most entrepreneurs aren't really good at translating that to some form where it's more actionable that's not in their brain.
Right.
And so they get it all locked up in their heads. I was working with a client a few years ago, and he always made 6 and 7 figures. But what would happen is what it cost him in time and energy to create that high 6 and 7 figures, he would be so spent at the end of a campaign or at the end of it that he would fall apart and have to go take like a 2-month vacation. And so he lost his consistency.
Mm-hmm.
He would be up and then he'd be down. And so one of the things we had to look at is the fact that he would keep his plan in his brain. And then once he was ready to act on it, like work like a crazy person 24 hours a day, you know, for weeks at a time. And he wasn't acting through a team. He wasn't leveraging his time well. He wasn't planning ahead. And that's because it was all locked up in his own brain.
So then is part of the process that you recommend that people get this stuff down on paper or on screen?
Well, I think, you know, there's different ways. You know, and I work with my clients. I work on 3 dimensions. We look at what has to happen to generate the revenue they want to make.
Yep.
Then what has to happen to market and actually generate that business. So basically plan number 1 is what offerings will you focus on this year? Plan number 2 is what do you have to do to generate that traffic and those sales? And then plan number 3 is what do you have to do to really get into the detail of executing those plans well?
Right.
So, you know, mapping out an entire project plan instead of just leaving it to chance and hoping it'll work out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so from what you're saying then, a lot of the issue is writing, getting it down, clarifying exactly what it is you're trying to accomplish. Is that correct?
Yeah, clarity leads to proactivity.
Yeah.
So if you're clear, and here's an example. I had a client who, she was making really good money, but there was, you know, a constant, like, underperformance of her offerings.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because she literally would go from one program offering right into the next one. And so her list was getting burned out. Her clients were kind of saturated and they weren't really understanding like why all this stuff was coming at them all the time. And they just started checking out. So we worked on what I call a sequencing. This program is going to happen in March and it's going to lead to sales for, you know, this other program that starts in April. And so what we would do in terms of looking at the year was what's going to happen in what month? And then when do you have to start preparing and creating and marketing for each of these offerings? So that instead of everything being on top of each other, they were sequenced properly in the team and my client knew exactly what to do in what order. So that then tied to the revenue projections, she knew exactly what her low end and her high end would potentially be in revenue. And the whole focus becomes instead of like, I got to create all these new things because I don't know how I'm going to make my revenue goals. It became, how do I actually just get more people in the programs I'm offering? How do I work on optimizing my sales process?
Yeah, that makes sense. And what's the logical flow? Do you find that entrepreneurs are often don't actually map out their processes? They're just sort of
Oh,
seat of the
yes.
pants.
Well, it's funny you say that because I have a client in Australia, and so when we started working together, and I was looking at what does she do to create the business and the revenue, I started saying, so how do you do this? She goes, well, and she would talk me through, and I said, do you have that documented? Do you have a system for that? She would cringe. She's like, I don't want to talk about systems. That's so icky. She just didn't want to think about that because I think for a lot of people who are highly creative, the creation of a system makes you feel restricted, and they don't realize that structure actually creates freedom because if you know what to do in what order and you have a replicatable process that you're not burning creativity cells trying to remember what to do, you can actually use your time and your energy and your focus more effectively, for other things.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that you mention that because, as I say, the last few couple of months on my podcast, we've shifted to focusing a lot more on process issues. And for a while, I was seeing that my listener numbers were down. I think they're starting to go back up again now. Well, I know they are, but it's hard to make process sexy. How do you convince people to take that seriously?
Well, that's a really good question. How do I get people to take that conversation seriously? I think part of it is they look at they see me as their role model. So my clients hire me because I'm walking what I'm talking and because they know that I'm experiencing a lifestyle and a way of running my business that's really uber sexy to them. They're like, how do I have more of that? And it's not that I'm perfect in any way. Please know that no one ever attains perfection with this. And if they say they are, they're probably, trying to sweep some stuff under the carpet. But what I found as a rule is that because they can experience me and see the reality that I'm not working countless hours, that I am able to scale my financial success and, the abilities that I have to get things out quickly and do more of what I love to do, that they want to replicate that. And if I tell them this is how we replicate it, is we have systems that work, we have a plan, we use business models that are proven to be effective. I leverage a team. And they know if they want to create what I have, they have to follow these specific steps that I've taken to, with a little bit of adapting into their own unique personalities, that's how you get there. So I think one of it is really demonstrating how viable and how enjoyable it is when those things are in place. I think the second thing that I do that I think really helps is I make it simple for them. I think people resist things that feel complicated, but and especially the more creative you are, if you know that there's a way to make it work for you, and so I use a process called reframing. And oftentimes, if somebody's triggered by certain words, we just figure out what is it that they really want and what's the language or the approach to get there that is in alignment with their way of seeing the world. So if somebody's highly creative, we'll package it and call it something that fits in their paradigm of the world. If somebody's more logical, we'll use a more, logic-oriented process to get there. And I think one of the things that most people don't realize is that there are at least four very unique ways of processing information and data and, the way we take in situations and make decisions. And so not everybody consumes and can apply things the same.
Right, absolutely. Anyone who's ever taught knows that. So, but that is really interesting to reframe it in language that makes more sense for the individuals. That makes a lot of sense. You talk as well about how seemingly innocent thoughts can be sabotaging your ability to take your business to another level. Can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Well, I found something very fascinating in the first 2 years of running my own business. So I've been in business since the year 2000, and I'll be quite honest that the first 2 years I struggled greatly. And I left corporate America. I had a very close to a six-figure job, which means, I was taking home six figures, not just making six figures in my business, right? And I did not translate my skills well from that corporate arena into my own business, mm-hmm. which I think many people can relate to, because now you're on the hook for your own income. And I found out about 18 months into my journey, I went through a process and I studied with a mentor who really, like, he really rewired something in the way I thought. And so within 9 months of that journey, I went from making about $1,500 on average a month, which was very scary, especially living in Los Angeles, because you basically can't even buy food for that much here. And I leapt into making six figures.
So what changed?
My thoughts. And what I didn't realize, and what I sense have recoded almost 10,000 people in the way their brain works and how they process money and how they focus, is I found that the thoughts I was thinking were causing me to either avoid or to maybe resist or to talk myself out of doing things that, you know, that should be done. I mean, there were so many ways in which I was sabotaging my own success.
So can you give me an example of the sort of thing that you were doing that?
I hated sales. I would literally, like, I would sabotage sales because I didn't feel that having a higher level of success was congruent with the lifestyle I wanted. I thought I would lose who I was, or I would not be respected, or people would think bad of me if I was making a lot of money.
Really?
And so, and also at the time, you know, as a woman, I still wanted a family. And I had these beliefs that I couldn't be a good mom and have a successful business. So I did some rewiring, and there's a lot of different ways in which you can do that. There's just upgrading your belief system. So for many people, like, if you think money's wrong or bad, or you think, oh, I'm never going to be able to, you know, be loved, or people, I'm going to lose people's respect if I make more money than they do, then there's a recoding you do to up-level your beliefs. But there's also two other ones where if you're in conflict, so if I have more success, I will lose, and usually as I lose time or I'll lose, you know, something important to me, there's a conflict in place.
Right.
Or if I pursue this goal, I won't be able to do that goal. That oftentimes you have to be able to upgrade what you believe is possible, and that's called a values alignment. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing I found is sometimes it's just you have to be willing to release the wound or the story that you made up about something in order to be able to clean the slate and have a more effective success program running in your brain. So I've had clients who came in who had had financial troubles in the past. Maybe they had a business that failed and they took it personally, and they thought, and they kept telling themselves, like, I don't want to put myself out there for more failure. And so we'd recode their belief system so that that wasn't dragging them down. And, you know, I had a guy who he'd blown up basically a multimillion-dollar business, but it wasn't his fault. He had a partner involved, and there were some things that happened. And so, you know, he wasn't blameless, but it wasn't really his fault. And so we recoded his belief system and got the issues out, the wound out. And what happened was he jumped back into, like, a multimillion-dollar business within about 6 months of, you know, clearing out those beliefs. So I think it's very common. Another one, and you might relate to this one, I know a lot of people do who are business owners, is if I'm going to be more successful, I have to work harder. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, that is one way to get there. But I've actually proven that you can actually achieve higher levels of success, six, even seven figures, by working more strategically, or working in a more leveraged way, or redesigning your business, or, you know, hiring help. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about that hiring help thing, because this is one issue that I know I've dealt with at times, and certainly lots of others have, which is, okay, I don't really have revenue, or if you don't really have a lot of revenue coming in, or it's totally unpredictable, how can you then go about bringing yourself to hire somebody to help you? And yet, without that help, you can't grow because you're busy doing the administrative stuff instead of the important stuff. So how do you advise companies in that situation?
Well, there's a couple of things that in my own journey really helped. And the first one, you know, when I first hired my first team member, I did not have the money for them. I did not know where it was going to come from, but I knew that I could only grow as much as I could personally attend to the tasks and activities required. So it was like the chicken and the egg. At some point, you have to be willing to take the risk. That's what business is all about, taking calculated risks. And if I was willing to take the calculated risk and invest in somebody that I knew was effective, and that they could generate more revenue by freeing me up from the things that were taking up way too much time, that was a smart business decision. So I literally had to take a leap of faith the first 3 months and to invest in my future success. But it paid off because that was actually part of what I was willing to do when I recoded my mindset.
Yeah,
I knew it was time. Like, I couldn't go any bigger if I didn't have help. And there were way too many things I was trying to learn, way too many things I wasn't good at. So it's a mindset piece. And the second piece is, what would have to happen for this to be a good return on investment?
Okay.
So the first person I hired was a virtual assistant, and she charged $350 a month. Mm-hmm. But she freed me up about 10 hours a week.
Right.
And she really was working maybe 5 to 8 hours a week. So it was a great exchange.
Yes.
And what I found was that I, with those 10 hours, could reinvest them back into working with more clients.
Right.
So with 10 hours a week, I could serve 3 clients, which was a 3x return on investment at the time.
Right.
And that's what you have to think. You have to think strategically. And what most people do, and I'll just be really frank about this, is most people stop their ability to grow by saying, I can't afford it. And it can be anything. It could be a training. It could be a mentor. It could be a strategy. It could be hiring help. But they stop at, I can't afford it. A more effective way to handle it is to say, what would have to happen with this investment to first cover it and then make it a profitable investment? Mm-hmm. And if you can really grasp that and put that into action, it will transform everything in how you're able to evolve your business and be able to get yourself out of being the bottleneck in the growth.
Yeah. Well, and I think another approach that I've seen that can be quite helpful is working backwards almost. So, okay, if I wanted to generate this much income, how many clients would I need to get that many clients? What kind of support would I need to do the sales, et cetera, et cetera? And I think that's also a way that can help achieve that. Well, I think we've sort of covered the main issues. Is there anything else that you would like to touch on that I haven't asked about?
Well, you know, there's something that I've been using as my mantra for a long time. And again, it's about, I think 90% of success is what you train your brain to do. Mm-hmm. Because our mind, our thoughts are dictating what we say yes to in terms of activity, and our activities are generating the results. So logically, it makes sense to get our brain on the right channel. And so one of the things I taught myself a long time ago was that everything I was saying yes to means I'm saying no to something else.
Yeah.
And if I'm caught up in doing things that are not a good use of my time, or I'm, you know, saying yes to opportunities that are not in alignment with where I want to be, and quite frankly, if I'm letting my brain run around and do craziness and have negativity and focus on problems and, you know, not train it to focus on where I'm going and what I want from that, that, you know, I'll have a very slow machine that's kind of sluggishly moving forward. So it's my job to be the best me, the best entrepreneur, the best leader, the best of whatever it is that we deliver, in order to be able to pull off these higher levels of success, whatever that means to you.
Mm-hmm. So as I've explained to many female entrepreneurs, don't bake the cookies for the bake sale. Just go and buy some and put them in your own packaging.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
So how do you manage your time with all the different digital media things? How do you set your priorities for that?
Well, in terms of the social media side of it, you know, I find that it's about really looking at what's delivering results and where are there being connections made that serve. Mm-hmm. I happen to run a chat on Twitter each week for speakers, so being on Twitter is a really valuable use of my time. And when I'm on Twitter and I'm active on Twitter and I'm sharing great content, which I feel that most people would agree I do is, you know, it's helping to build the momentum in that. Mm-hmm. And you know, quite frankly, I probably get about 30 to 40% of my clients from that weekly chat. So it's a great use of my time. Mm-hmm. And so I look at, it's basically probably between 45 minutes to an hour a day, when I'm being active.
Yeah.
But I'm creating things that have a return on my time investment. Mm-hmm. And it might be a little bit more than that if we're in an active campaign, and it might be a little bit less than that if everything's in maintenance mode. So it's somewhere in that nature. But we track and we know what's working and what's not working.
Okay, so this wasn't purely about digital marketing, although I did find it very interesting, her comment that she runs a Twitter chat group and gets about 40% of her clients from that. Pretty impressive. I also thought it was very important to note that she comments right towards the end there that they actually track and monitor to know which of her activities are paying off financially and which aren't. Good bit of advice there, I think, for all of us. You can find out more about Melanie and the programs she offers at successconnections.com. And you can also, of course, find out more about Frank Online Marketing and the programs we offer at frankonlinemarketing.com. And while you're there, you can check out other podcast episodes and the blog. And feel free to drop me a line. Let me know what you're thinking and what are some of the challenges you're dealing with these days. You can reach me directly, Tema, T-E-M as in mother, A, at frankonlinemarketing.com. You can always give me a call at toll-free 1-866-544-9262. And I'd really love to get your feedback on some of the posts on the blog itself, as well as your feedback on the podcast. And I'd be really grateful if you'd head on over to iTunes and or Stitcher and leave your feedback there. And tell others about the podcast too, so they can benefit from it too. If you have any suggestions for people or companies that you'd like to learn more about, please pass on those suggestions and we'll make sure we get them on. That's all for today. Have a wonderful weekend and I will chat with you next week. Bye.